Chapter 12. Clavaine woke from a period of forced sleep, rising through dreams of collapsed buildings and sandstorms. There was a moment of bleary readjustment while he synced with his surroundings, and the memories of recent events tumbled into place. He recalled the session within the closed council and the trip out to Skade's Comet. He recalled meeting the Master of Works and learning about the buried fleet of what were obviously intended to be evacuation ships. He remembered how he had stolen the corvette and pointed it towards the inner system at maximum burn. He was still inside the corvette, still in the forward pilot's position. His fingers brushed against the tactile controls, calling up the display screens. They bustled into place around him, opening and brightening like sunflowers. He did not quite trust the corvette to communicate with him neurally, for Skade might have managed to plant an incapacitating routine in the ship's control web. He thought it unlikely that she had. The ship had obeyed him unquestioningly so far, but there was no sense in taking unnecessary risks. The flower-like screens filled with status readouts, schematics of the corvette's manifold subsystems strobing by at frantic speed. Clavaine upped his consciousness rate until the cascade of images slowed to something he could assimilate. There were some technical issues, reports of damage that the corvette had sustained during the escape, but nothing that would threaten the mission. The other readouts showed summaries of the tactical situation in increasingly large volumes of space, spreading out from the corvette in powers of 10. Clavaine studied the icons and annotations, noting the proximity of both conjoiner and demarcist vessels, drones, rover mines, and larger assets. There was a major battle taking place 3 light-hours away, but there was nothing closer. Nor was there any sign of a response from the Mother Nest. It didn't mean that there had been no response, since Clavaine was relying on the tactical data that the corvette was intercepting using passive sensors and by tapping into system-wide communication nets, rather than risking the use of its own active sensors, which would betray its position to anyone looking in the right direction. But at least there was, so far, no obvious response. Clavaine smiled and shrugged, and was immediately reminded of the broken rib he had sustained during the escape. The pain was duller than it had been before, since he had remembered to strap on a medical tabard before going to sleep. The tabard had directed magnetic fields into his chest, coaxing the bone into re-knitting. But the discomfort was still there, proving that none of it had been in his imagination. There was a patch on his hand, too, where the piezo knife had cut to the bone, but the wound had been clean and there was very little pain from the self-inflicted injury. So he had done it. There had been a moment during that state of hazy reacquaintance with reality when he had dared to imagine that the memories of recent events stemmed only from a series of troubling dreams, the kind that afflicted any soldier with anything resembling a conscience. Anyone who had lived through enough wars, enough history, to know that what appeared to be the right action at the time might later turn out to be the direst of mistakes. But he had gone through with it, betraying his people. And it was a betrayal, no matter how pure the motive. They had trusted him with a shattering secret, and he had violated that trust. There had not been time to evaluate the wisdom of defection in anything but the most cursory manner. From the moment he had seen the evacuation fleet, and understood what it meant, he knew that he had one opportunity to leave, and that it would mean stealing the corvette there and then. If he had waited any longer, until they got back to the Mother Nest, for instance, Skade would surely have seen his intentions. She had already had suspicions, but it would take her time to pick through the unfamiliar architecture of his mind, his antique implants and half-forgotten neural interface protocols. He could not afford to give her that time. So he had acted, knowing that he would probably not see Felka again, since he did not expect to remain a free man, or even a living one, after he had entered into the next and most difficult phase of his defection. It would have been far better if he had been able to see her one last time. There would have been no hope of persuading her to come with him, and no way of arranging her escape even if she had been willing. But he could have let her know his intentions, certain that his secret was safe with her. He also thought she would have understood, not necessarily agreed, but she would not have tried to argue him out of it. And if there had been a final farewell, he thought, then she might have answered the question he had never quite had the courage to ask her. The question that went back to the time of Galliana's Nest and the war-weary days on Mars when they had met for the first time. He would have asked her if she was his daughter, and she might have answered. Now he would have to live without ever knowing, and though he might never have summoned the courage, in all the years before he had never managed it after all, the permanence of his exile and the impossibility of ever knowing the truth felt as bleak and cold as stone. Clavaine decided he had better learn to live with it. He had defected before, throwing away one life, and he had survived both emotionally and physically. He was older now, but not so old and weary that he could not do it again. The trick, for now, was to focus only on immediates. Fact one was that he was still alive, and that his injuries were minor. He thought it likely that missiles were on their way to him, but they could not have been launched until long after he had taken the corvette, or they would have already shown up on the passive sensors. Someone, very probably Remontoire, had managed to delay matters sufficiently to give him this edge. It was not much of an edge, but it was a lot better than being already dead, surfing his own expanding cloud of ionized debris. That at least was worth another rueful smile. They might yet kill him, but it would not be close to home. He scratched his beard, muscles laboring against the continual pull of acceleration. The corvette's motors were still firing at maximum sustainable thrust, 3 Gs that felt as rock-solid and smooth as the pull of a star. Each second, the ship was annihilating a bacterium-sized speck of antimatter, but the antimatter and metallic hydrogen reaction mass cores had barely been scratched. The corvette would take him anywhere he wanted in the system, and it would get him there in only tens of days. He could even accelerate harder if he wished, though it would stress the engines. Fact two was that he had a plan. The corvette's antimatter thrusters were advanced, far more so than anything in the enemy's fleet, but they did not employ the same technology as the conjoiner starship drive. They could not have pushed a million-ton starship to within a whisker of light speed, but they did have one significant tactical advantage. They were silent across the entire neutrino emission spectrum. Since Clavaine had disabled all the usual transponders, he could be tracked only by his emission flame, the torch of relativistic particles slamming from the corvette's exhaust apertures. But the corvette's exhaust was already as tightly collimated as a rapier blade. There was negligible scattering away from the axis of thrust, so effectively he could only be seen by anything or anyone sitting in a very narrow cone immediately to his rear. The cone widened as it reached further behind him, but it also became steadily attenuated, like a torch beam growing weaker with distance. Only an observer near its center would detect sufficient number of photons to obtain an accurate fix on his position, and if Clavaine allowed the cone's angle to tilt by no more than a handful of degrees, the beam would become too dim to betray him. But a change in beam vector implied a change in course. The Mother Nest would not expect him to do that, only for him to maintain a minimum time trajectory towards Epsilon Eridani, and then to Yellowstone, which huddled in a tight warm orbit around the same star. He would get there in 12 days. Where else could he go? The corvette could not reach another system. It barely had the range to reach the cometary halo, and almost any other world apart from Yellowstone was still in nominal Demarchist control. Their hold might be faltering, but in their present paranoid state they would still attack Clavaine, even if he claimed to be defecting with tactically valuable secrets. But Clavaine knew all that, even before he plunged the piezo knife into the membrane around Skade's comet. He had formulated a plan, maybe not the most detailed or elegant of his career, and it was far from the most likely to succeed, but he had only had minutes to assemble it, and he did not think he had done too badly. Even after reconsideration, nothing better had presented itself, and all it needed was a little trust.
"I want to know what happened to me."
They looked at her, and then at each other. She could almost feel the intense buzz of their thoughts crackling through the air like the ionization breakdown that presaged a thunderstorm. The first of the surgeons projected calm and reassurance. "Skade," I said, "I want to know what happened to me." "You are alive. You were injured, but you survived. You are still in need of..." The surgeon's gloss of calm faltered. "In need of what?" "You still need to be properly healed, but everything can be made good." For some reason, she could not see into any of their heads. For most conjoiners, waking to experience such isolation would have been a profoundly disturbing experience, but Skade was equipped for it. She endured it stoically, reminding herself that she had experienced degrees of isolation almost as extreme during her time in the closed council. Those had ended. This would end. It would only be a matter of time until... "What is wrong with my implants?" "Nothing's wrong with your implants." She knew that the surgeon was a man named Delmar. "So why am I isolated?" But almost before she had phrased the question, she knew what the answer would be. It was because they did not want her to be able to see what she looked like through their eyes. Because they did not want her to know the immediate truth of what had happened to her. "Skade."
"Never mind."
"I know. Why did you bother waking me?"
"There is someone to see you."
She could not move her head, only her eyes. Through the blur of peripheral vision, she saw Remontoir approach the bed or table or couch where they had woken her. He wore an electric white medical tunic against a background of pure white. His head was an oddly disconnected sphere, bobbing towards her. Swan-necked medical servitors moved out of his way. The surgeon folded his arms across his chest and looked on with an expression of stern disapproval. His colleagues had made a discreet exit, leaving only the three of them in the room. Skade peered down towards the foot of the bed, but could see only an out-of-focus whiteness that might have been illusory. There was a quiet mechanical humming, but nothing that she would not have expected in a medical room. Remontoir knelt down beside her.
"How much do you remember? You tell me what happened, and I'll tell you what I remember."
Remontoir glanced back at the surgeon. He allowed Skade to hear the thought he pushed into Delmar's head.
"I'm afraid you'll have to leave us. Your machines as well, since I'm certain that they have recording devices."
"We'll leave you alone for exactly 5 minutes, Remontoir. Will that be sufficient?"
"It'll have to do, won't it?"
Remontoir nodded and smiled as the man ushered his machines from the room, their swan necks lowering elegantly to pass through the doorway.
"Sorry. 5 minutes, Remontoir."
Skade tried moving her head again, but still without success.
"Come closer, Remontoir. I can't see you very easily. They won't show me what happened."
"Do you remember the comet? Clavain was with us. You were showing him the buried ships."
"I remember."
"Clavain stole the corvette before you or I could get aboard. It was still tethered to the surface of the comet."
She remembered taking Clavain to the comet, but not the rest of it.
"And did he get away?"
"Yes, but we'll come to that. The problem is what happened during his escape. Clavain applied thrust until the tethers gave way under the strain. They whiplashed back towards the comet. I'm afraid one of them caught you."
It was difficult to respond, though she had known from the moment of waking that something bad had happened to her.
"Caught me?"
"You were injured, Skid. Badly. If you hadn't been conjoiner, hadn't had the machines in your head to help your body to cope with the shock, you would very probably not have survived, even with the assistance that your suit was able to give you."
"Show me, damn you."
"I would if there was a mirror in the room, but there isn't, and I can't bypass the neural blockades that Delmar has installed."
"Describe it, then. Describe it, Remontoir."
"That isn't why I came, Skade. Delmar will put you back into a recuperative coma very shortly, and when you next wake, you'll be healed again. I came to ask you about Clavain."
For a moment she pushed aside her own morbid curiosity.
"I take it he's dead?"
"Actually, they haven't managed to stop him yet."
As angry as she was, and despite her morbid curiosity,
She had to admit that the matter of Clavain was at least as fascinating to her as her own predicament, and the two things were not unconnected, were they? She did not yet fully understand what had happened to her, but it was enough to know that it had been Clavain's doing. It did not matter that it might not have been intentional. There were no accidents in treason.
Where is he? That's the funny thing. No one seems to know. They had a fix on his exhaust. He was heading towards Eridani, towards what we assumed would be Yellowstone or the Rust Belt. The Demarchists would crucify him.
Remontoir nodded.
Clavain, especially. But now it doesn't look as if he was going there at all. Not directly, anyway. He turned away from the sunward vector. We don't know how far into his journey since we lost his drive flame. We have optical monitors strewn through the halo. Surely he'll have fallen into the line of sight of another one by now. The problem is that Clavain knows the positions of those monitors. He can make sure his beam doesn't sweep across them. We have to keep reminding ourselves that he's one of ours, Sked.
Were missiles launched?
Yes, but they never got close enough to establish their own fixes. They didn't have enough fuel to make it back to the nest, so we had to detonate them.
She felt drool loosen itself and trail down her chin.
We have to stop him, Remontoir. Grasp that. Even if we pick up Clavain's signal again, it'd be out of effective missile range, and no other ships can catch a corvette.
She bit down on her fury.
We have the prototype. Even Nightshade isn't that fast. Not over solar system-type distances.
Skade said nothing for several seconds, calculating how much he could prudently reveal. This was inner sanctum business after all, sensitive even by the clandestine standards of closed council.
It is, Remontoir.
The door opened. One of the servitors ducked under and in, followed by Delmar. Remontoir stood and extended his hands, palms facing forwards.
We just need another moment.
Delmar stood by the door, arms folded.
I'm staying here, I'm afraid.
Skade hissed at Remontoir. He moved closer, bending down so that their heads were only centimeters apart, permitting mind-to-mind contact without amplification by the room's systems.
It can be done. The prototype has a higher acceleration ceiling than you have assumed.
How much higher?
A lot, you'll see.
But all you need to know is that the prototype can get close enough to Clavain's approximate position to pick up his trail again, and then close within weapons range. I'll need you on the crew, of course.
You're a soldier, Remontoir.
You know the weapons better than I do.
Shouldn't we be thinking of ways to bring him back alive? It's a little late for that, wouldn't you say?
Remontoir said nothing, but she knew she had made her point. And he would come around to her viewpoint soon enough. He was a conjoiner to the Corps, and would therefore accept any course of action, no matter how ruthless, that benefited the Mother Nest. That was the difference between Remontoir and Clavain.
Sked. Yes, Remontoir. If I should consent to your proposal, you'd have a demand of your own?
Not a demand. A request. That Felker be allowed to join us. Skade narrowed her eyes. She was about to refuse when she realized that her grounds for doing so, that the operation had to remain entirely within the purview of the closed council, made no difference where Felker was concerned.
What possible good would Felker's presence serve?
That depends. If you intend to make this an execution squad, she will be of no use to us at all. But if you have any intention of bringing Clavain back alive,
and I think you must, then Felker's usefulness cannot be underestimated.
Skate knew he was right, though it pained her to admit it. Clavain would have been an immensely valuable asset to the operation to recover the Hell-class weapons, and his loss would make the operation very much more difficult. On one level, she could see the attraction of bringing him back into the fold, so that he could be pinned down and his hard-won expertise sucked out like so much bone marrow. But a live capture would be inordinately more difficult than a long-range kill, and until she succeeded, there would remain the possibility of him reaching the other side. The Demarchists would be fascinated to hear about the new shipbuilding program, the rumors of evacuation plans and savage new weapons. Skade could not be certain, but she thought that the news might be enough to reinvigorate the enemy, gaining them allies who had thus far remained neutral. If the Demarchists rallied and managed to launch some kind of last-ditch attack on the Mother Nest, with the support of the Ultras and any number of previously neutral factions, all could be lost. No. She had to kill Clavain. That was simply not open to debate. Equally, she had to give every impression that she was ready to act reasonably, just as she would have done under any other state of war, which meant that she had to accept Falca's presence. This is blackmail, isn't it?
Not blackmail, Skade. Just negotiation. If any one of us can talk Clavain out of this, it has to be Falca.
He won't listen to her. Even if
he thinks she's his daughter? Is that what you were going to say?
He's an old man, Remontoire. An old man with delusions. They're not my responsibility.
The servitors moved aside to allow him to leave. She watched the seemingly detached ovoid of his face bob out of the room like a balloon. There had been instants in their conversation when she had almost sensed cracks in the neural blockade, pathways that Delmar had, through understandable oversight, not completely disabled. The cracks had been like strobe flashes, opening up brief frozen windows into Remontoire's skull. Very probably he had not even been aware of her intrusions. Perhaps she had even imagined them. But if she had imagined them, she had also imagined the horror that went with them, and the horror came from what Remontoire was seeing.
Delmar, I really would like to know the facts.
Later, Skade, after you've been healed. Then you can know. Until then, I'd rather put you back into coma.
Show me now, you bastard.
He came close to her side. The first of the swan-necked servitors towered over him, the chrome segments of its neck gleaming. The machine angled its head back and forth, digesting what lay below it.
All right, but don't say you weren't warned.
The blockades came down like heavy metal shutters, clunk, clunk, clunk through her skull. A barrage of neural data crashed in. She saw herself through Delmar's eyes. The thing down on the medical couch was her, recognizably so. Her head was bizarrely unharmed, but she was not remotely the right shape. She felt a twisting spasm of revulsion, as if she had just accessed a photograph from some bleak pre-industrial archive of medical nightmares. She wanted desperately to turn the page, to move on to the next pitiful atrocity. She had been bisected. The tether must have fallen across her from her left shoulder to her right hip, a precise diagonal severance. It had taken her legs and her left arm. Carapacial machinery hugged the wounds, gloss-white humming scabs of medical armor, like huge, pus-filled blisters. Fluid lines erupted from the machinery and trailed into the white modules squatting by her side. She looked as if she was bursting out of a white steel chrysalis, or being consumed by it, transformed into something strange and phantasmagoric.
Delmar.
I'm sorry, Skade, but I did warn.
You don't understand. This state doesn't concern me at all. We're conjoiners, aren't we? There isn't anything we can't repair, given time. I know you can fix me eventually.
She felt his relief. Eventually, yes. But eventually isn't good enough. In a few days, 3 at the most, I need to be on a ship.